comments and views expressed on The Kevin Smith Show are those of the people that make them and do not necessarily reflect the views of Kevin Smith, The Kevin Smith Show, or its affiliates or sponsors.
And welcome to the Kevin Smith Show, ladies and gentlemen, whoever you are, wherever you happen to be all around this beautiful earth. Thank you for being here at the Kevin Smith Show, talk radio like nowhere else on earth. We're here because you have a right to know, and you matter. All around the world, there are people who are keenly interested in something that we had never even heard about until Zechariah Sitchin wrote about it. The planet the Sumerians called Nibiru, the planet scientists refer to as Planet X. There are many people who think that this planet is destined to cause great cataclysms on Earth in 2012. Others think that the dates on our calendar are off, and the year in which the cataclysm should be expected is 2011. Still others think that there'll be no massive cataclysms as a result of Nibiru's arrival, and yet others that deny any such planet even exists. It's not even a politician, and it is immensely controversial. Imagine that. Well, tonight, we're going to be talking with someone who's been researching this controversial subject for quite some time. Gordon Gianinotto is a lawyer. He's got a degree in psychology. He's been a professional photographer. He owns his own construction business. And he has amassed a great deal of evidence, information, and evidence for what he thinks is Nibiru and its coming cataclysms. Gordon Gianinotto will be here with us in just a few minutes, and we're going to delve into these topics, Planet X and Pole Shift. Now, for those of you who are watching our TV channel, we'll be showing you some of the photos that he has provided, photos that he says is evidence for the reality of Planet X. Let me remind all of you that we do have a free weekly newsletter, and it's really free. It's not Washington, D.C. free, okay? It's really free, no strings attached. And all you have to do is just click on my website where it says K-Files, and when you click where it says K-Files, you'll be asked for some very important information. Just one item, your email address, okay? Now, you're going to receive, as a result of that, you're going to receive automatically and immediately an email from us that has a link in it that you have to use to activate that subscription. If you don't activate it, you won't get it, all right? So be sure you do that. You can unsubscribe anytime you want to, and like I said, it's free. So it's chock full of great information, and the question then is, if it's free and it's full of great information, where's the genius in not getting it? All the genius is in getting it, so be sure you get it, okay? Let me encourage you also to join our members area. It's only 23 cents a day, and if you're a member, you're watching right now, and you'll get to see Gordon Gianinotto and the photos that he's brought to us here tonight. We'll be back right after this, so don't go away.
And you are smart because you are listening to The Kevin Smith Show.
Okay, well, we did something just a little bit different there for our TV audience. I wanted you to hear one of our listeners. We say that it is a listener-supported show, and some people think that's just financial, but it's far more than that. Our listeners do a lot of things for us, including create some of the video we use. And a lot of the audio we use. All right. What do you think about Nibiru? What do you think about Planet X? Some people think it's a myth. Some people think it's just a nutty idea that people out there on the fringe in the alternative world have. But there are some very serious people as well who think that Nibiru, Planet X, is very real and has very real consequences as it passes through our solar system. My guest this evening is someone like that. Very serious individual, and also who is quite serious about the reality of Nibiru. Joining us from his home high atop a mountain, truthfully, but I won't tell you which mountain or where it is. And welcome to our guest, Gordon Gianinotto.
Hi, Kevin. It's a pleasure to be on.
Gordon, you've heard everything that I've said about Nibiru and Planet X here at the beginning. I do think it's kind of interesting that here we've got something that's not even a politician and it's highly controversial. But
you put it exactly correctly the way it is. It is very controversial. And you would think if NASA has been taking close-up photographs of it since 2003 and it appears on their website, when it automatically downloads, and you never know when that's going to appear, but you'd think if it was occurring that frequently and there were thousands of pictures of it that people have downloaded from the NASA website, that at least they would discuss what is in the picture.
Why do you think they don't?
Oh, they can't stand it. They've known for at least, I think they even knew before Roswell, because I think there's all kinds of UFO incidents that never got reported. There was one in Missouri in 1941, and I was shown privately a photograph of a Navy-operated captured alien saucer that was taken in 1938, and it was supposed to be invisible, and the invisibility was failing, and that's how somebody took a picture of it. But they definitely got the idea, first of all, from the extraterrestrials, and second of all, they did their own research, and third of all, they're reading Zeta Talk, which is what I think everyone else should be doing. And there's 39,000 pages on that one website, and it lays out every possible thing you would want to know, including the safe, the safer, and the safest areas to be in, when it would happen, and what it would be like. And the thing is that there isn't an exact calendar. There's an event calendar. And for instance, one of the things with that earthquake in Japan was just a warm-up. So when Japan gets rocked from south to north, within hours, the New Madrid Fault is going to go off. Within hours of that, the Atlantic Rift is going to split wider than it is and send a 300-foot tidal wave over southern England, which is going to wash over the UK and take out Denmark and flood all the Baltic lowlands. And that isn't even pole shift. That's just the lead-up to pole shift. So,
now, you're quite serious about this. I mean, as far as you're concerned, it's really going to happen that way.
Absolutely. If you can see some of the pictures that I sent you, they show there are ancient glyphs and symbols carved around the world by ancient civilizations, and some of them are spirals. And when you see spirals, that's a warning that the age is about to turn. And when you see the winged globe, which is Nibiru, is trailed by hundreds of moons, some as big as our moon, and then trillions of rocks and clouds of iron ore dust. So it's got a serpentine tail that actually ripples in the sky. If you, when it comes close enough, which it will, it'll be about the size of the full moon. And after it passes, the tail will rain rocks down on the earth. And then iron ore dust will just be totally filling the atmosphere, and the oceans will turn a split pea green, a funny split pea green. And believe it or not, as bad as all that is, the plankton are going to go nuts, because the one thing they love is iron ore dust. And the plankton is the basis of the food chain, so the first thing to come back will be the oceans. But this happens every 3,657 years, and record keeping goes to hell. So there's very few records of it, but yet there are all these symbols, and particularly Zechariah Sitchin wrote his books based on Sumerian tablets, and they go back 5,000 years. And they have a complete description of the people who live on Nibiru and why they came here, and without getting into too much religion, why they created us as a race of slaves to mine gold, and what, and then Zeta talks about why they're not here anymore. But it's a very interesting topic, and it's been covered up by the government because they have no intention of saving everybody. And
you're saying they have no intention of saving everybody?
No. It's they have a plan for the elite, and you've heard that phrase, Alternative 3?
Yeah.
Alternative 1 was to kill everybody that's useless. Alternative 2 was to build bunkers, and they tried that. They actually have some 36-hole golf courses underground. If you can just imagine, if you've ever played golf, how high the cavern ceilings must be. But then they realized that they aren't going to do too well when you put a 9 or a 10 Richter scale. So alternative 3 was for the selfish extraterrestrials to bring the elite off the Earth to the Moon or Mars, and then they could come back as kings of the Earth. And then they realized the selfish extraterrestrials were lying to them, and they were never going to be taken anywhere. The whole NASA, you can say what you want, thinking in the back of your mind that NASA has always been in the interest of science, researching space for all of mankind. And that is the farthest thing from the truth you could possibly imagine. The entire purpose from day one, from the day it was announced by Kennedy to go to the moon, the only purpose was to see if they could build bases on the moon and Mars to survive troubleshoot for the elite.
Okay, I want to get into that. I want to get into the occupants of Planet X, and why they came to Earth, and what they look like, and what they were all about. I want to do all of that. But first, I want us to talk about the evidence that Planet X really exists. Now, Gordon, you know, sitting where I sit, I get it from all sides. Okay? I get email from people who say, it's real, and, you know, I can't believe that you wouldn't believe this. Although, as I told you, I don't believe anything. I either know it or I don't. And if I don't, then I need to research it some more until I can say I know it's real or I know it's not. But I don't believe.
Yeah,
okay, but I get.
As you think you might take, can you imagine how much I've taken?
Oh, yeah. So I get it from people on that side. I get it from other people on the other side who are saying, I can't believe you would even have a show about this. That's the most ridiculous thing in the world. And, you know, how could you buy into this? It's a lost art, really, in our world, and particularly in the United States of America. It's a lost art, the art of listening to information and examining evidence and coming to a conclusion based on that. Somehow we're supposed to just believe one way or the other before we look at all of it. Well, I don't play that game.
I'm a seeing is believing type person, and so I'm not just making this up, and I didn't come to any of these conclusions randomly. I'm a speed reader. I have a tractor trailer full of metaphysical books and prophecies, and I've been interested in this since childhood. I've been seeing UFOs since I was 5 years old, had extraterrestrial experiences, and my whole life I've seen up close at least 36 saucers and met extraterrestrials, and you know, I'm not selling anything, so you don't have to believe me, but you want to listen long enough, I can tie enough things together that you're going to be really, if you don't already believe, I think you're going to be quite well swayed towards thinking it's very possible.
Well, I'm going to give you a fair shot at it. I want to start with some of the evidence that you have sent to me, which is pretty impressive stuff. And this, what I'm putting up right now is a, this is from a Sumerian seal, and is rolled out on clay. And what we see, is, we see a representation of, it looks like the solar system, perhaps over on the left. I don't know. And then we see a guy that, he's on the left, and he's facing toward the middle, toward the right. Over on the right, it appears possibly that's a female, but maybe not. But in the middle, we have this winged thing. What is that winged thing?
Yeah. See, Planet X is what we call it today. They called it Nibiru, and it was also known as the Planet of Crossing, because it came through our solar system regularly, and it was also known as the Destroyer Comet, even though it's not a comet. And a lot of people today call it a dwarf brown star, which it's not. It's a planet four times the size of Earth, and it's volcanic, it's atmospheric, and it's oceanic, and it's populated with 12 to 16 foot tall humans, selfish humans, very selfish humans. And they came to Earth and acted like gods. And at that time, who knew they weren't?
Okay, so what are we looking at here with this winged thing in the middle? Is that a representation?
That's a symbol for Nibiru.
Okay.
That's it. It's in the sky. And then the solar system is on the left. And the way you have this set up, all I can see is a thing called Webcam Max. I can't see what you're actually showing, but I sent it to you, so I think I have a good idea what it is.
Right.
On the right is a very large human, and that's the Anunnaki. That's what the people are called who live on Nibiru. And he's the Anunnaki king in charge of Earth.
All right. Now, you also sent me a number of photographs taken by SOHO.
Yeah.
And I chose one of those photographs to go with this seal. The reason I did...
Same thing, right?
Yeah, I'm going to tell you which one it is, okay? This is from April the 28th, 2006. And we see a winged thing out there around the sun. And then we have a box inset that where it's zoomed in on that. And exactly. If we put them side by side, they look pretty much alike. It looked pretty much like
there
what's on that seal.
Now, that's got to convince somebody. I don't know what percentage of your audience is convinced by that, but to me, it just blows my mind. I mean, how can you deny that there's symbols carved in the mountains of Bolivia, at Lake Titicaca, where there's the temple, Gate of the Sun. The symbols of the winged globe are carved in the stone. And here, all the prophecies say that it comes back every 3,657 years, and right on time, there it is. Now, I say right on time because the last time it was here was exactly approximately 1650 BC, which is when the Jews escaped from the Pharaoh in Egypt.
Okay, now let's talk about this thing just for a moment. Now, I've dealt with this, what I'm about to mention, I've dealt with this a lot here on this show. And that is when any kind of anomaly shows up like that in a NASA SOHO picture. When that happens, they generally say, well, that's an artifact of compression.
Pixelization,
artifact of compression. Describe for us why you don't think that's what we're looking at here.
Well, the first reason is that it shows up on so many different SOHO pictures in different angles, showing it to be the same thing. That occasionally it shows up as a cross, occasionally it shows up as a square block. But you've got to understand that if you were to stand up and let's say you're a giant and you stood up above the solar system and you just reached out with your hand and you grabbed the solar system and you threw it down on a table, there's some very interesting things going on with the solar system. Every single planet and the sun have their north poles facing upward. And the planets seen from above all turn around the sun counterclockwise. Now, in 1982 or 83, NASA sent up a satellite that saw infrared. And the reason why was they knew it was coming and they wanted to pick it up. And that was the IRAS satellite, I-R-A-S. And it's the infrared astronomical spectrometer. And in December of 1983, on the front page of the Washington Post, and it was reprinted in the New York Times, it hit all the major media, December 1983, NASA announced that they had found the incoming Planet X. They had been looking for it. They had calculated the imbalance in the outer planets, a perturbation that told them there must be something out there, and their search had been successful, and they spotted it and filmed it with IRIS. Now, that's big news. Now, as an aside, when have you ever heard NASA or JPL, Jet Propulsion Laboratory, take something back? And the very next day they said, whoops, we didn't find it. We're still looking for it. Now, I don't know about you, but JPL plots all the trajectories. So NASA is just a big bureaucracy, but when they send something up into space, it's JPL that calculates the trajectories. So they knew where to send the IRIS satellite. They knew what they were going to be filming, and then they went out and filmed it, and they announced to the world. And you know very well that same night, everyone goes, well, that's very interesting, but what does it mean? And that's when they realized, oh my God, we can't tell anybody what it means. We've got to say we've made a mistake. And that's what they did. And the very next day, that article is available on the Internet. They took it back. They said, oh, we didn't find it. We're still looking. So from the direction of Orion, out of the constellation Taurus, in comes this huge planet, four times the size of the Earth, trailing hundreds of moons in twin strands, just like a rope. And that's how come you get the wings. And I'm going to illustrate this on my video camera here, but it's like a bird wheeling. So the twin strands of moons stretch out to the side, and it ends up looking like a bird.
Okay, we've got to step away for a break, and we'll come back with the twin strands of the moons of Nibiru right after this. Don't go away, folks. Welcome back to the Kevin Smith Show. My guest this evening, Gordon James Giannotto. No, I said that wrong. Gianninotto. I'll get it right in just a moment. When we went away for break, you were describing the way that the wings, the appearance of wings, happens with this planet.
Yes, it's trailing, believe it or not, because it goes, the sun has a dead, is actually a part of a binary system. And there's a dead star. You can't see it even if you had a telescope. And it goes back and forth between this other star and the Earth every 3,657 years. So the moons trail behind it. They don't rotate around it like our moon rotates around the Earth. They're always trying to catch up. And the biggest ones are closest to Planet X. And the smallest ones are furthest away. And then there's trillions and trillions of rocks and gravel. So the 10 plagues of Egypt are basically a description of the times we're going through now. And that was the last pole shift. Just to give you an example, everyone is very familiar that it took 40 years for the Jews to find the Promised Land. And they were led by Moses and Joshua. And Joshua was the general. And yes, they did have thousands of people, animals, possessions, and they didn't know exactly where they were going. But get this. If I gave you a new pair of sneakers today and put you in Cairo, Egypt, how long do you think it would take for you to walk to the promised land? Under a week.
Yeah.
So why didn't Joshua and Moses take 40 years to go the same distance? And the reason why is it is about to happen to us. All the volcanoes on Earth go off at the same exact time, and you can't see the sky for up to 40 years. You have no idea of where north, south, east, or west is. All you know is every morning it gets bright and every night it gets dark, and you have no idea what direction to go in. All the mountain passes had landslides, so of course it took them 40 years.
So all right, now, some of the ancient descriptions of this planet talk about the wings of this planet being red.
Exactly. That's because it's a volcanic planet. It has huge volcanic rifts on it, and it has these giant clefts in the surface where lava is welling up, and it's creating this red glow that is reflected in the clouds. So most of the time, the Anunnaki don't even see the sky themselves, but it does clear. And some idiots gave them space travel, which was a big mistake, and thought they were doing them a favor. And they decided to come to Earth.
All right, I want to talk about these guys, the Anunnaki. Now, I'm sure that you're aware of the fact that within the debate about the Zechariah Sitchin information, there are people on one side who say that Sitchin made it all up, that it's these seals and these tablets, these clay tablets that he was supposed to have gotten all this information from, don't even exist. Of course, there are people on the other side who say, of course, they exist, and he translated them. And the source of our information about the Anunnaki would be the Zechariah Sitchin translations. Am I correct?
Well, yes and no. You have to understand that when archaeology was first founded as a science, German, French, and English archaeologists went to Sumeria and Mesopotamia and Babylonia, and they excavated they discovered an incredible cache of tablets in Sumeria, hundreds of thousands of them. And they eventually figured out how to translate them, and they wrote down everything they found. So Zechariah Sitchin neither went digging through the ruins of Sumeria, and he spoke German and a few other languages as well as English. So what he did was he was looking at these books going, hey, wait a minute, these guys aren't translating this the right way. The actual translation, what they're saying, should be involve beings from another planet. Those are the gods of that time. And you look at that cylinder seal, it's hard to tell, but it shows the solar system. And they called Earth not the third planet, but it was the seventh planet when you came from outside the solar system. So that by itself is an indication, the fact they called the Earth the seventh planet, that they were entering the solar system from outside the solar system.
Yeah, because we refer to us as the third rock from the sun, but they weren't coming from the sun, were they?
No, and you know, there are so many pieces that have come together. Now, you see, they wanted to mine gold. So the story is in the Sumerian tablets that they mined gold for probably, you know, 400,000 years. Because the Sumerian tablets give records of them being here a million years. So that's a long time. So they were mining gold for 400,000 years. And one day they said, what in the heck are we doing this for? Why don't we create some slaves to do this? So that was the creation of man. That was Adam and Eve. And there wasn't just one Adam and there wasn't just one Eve. It was the actual creation of a whole race of slaves. And they had some experiments. They said, well, we have to make them smart enough to be good gold miners, but not so smart that they would realize that they're eternal souls like us. So they created the one big thing that we notice in today's population is the atrophied pineal gland, and I'm sure you've heard of that.
Mm-hmm.
And if you could notice, all religions of the world put holy water on the top of the head, or they put a dot on the forehead. There are these energy centers, seven of them, and they correspond to seven endocrine glands. And the one at the top, the one that makes you realize that you're an eternal soul, that you live many lifetimes, and that if you could look at all your lifetimes, they would look like grains of sand on an endless beach. So you've lived on other planets. The Earth is young compared to the rest of the universe. So we're all from other places. Actually, we're all extraterrestrials. But they came here, and they wanted to mine gold because they powderize it, and they throw it up into their atmosphere, and they do that to insulate Nibiru on the long trip between solar systems. You wonder, well, how can a planet, I mean, we say, well, the Earth is full of life because we're a certain distance from the sun, and that's what makes it possible to have life here on Earth. But if you're a planet going through space, and the interesting thing is, inside of a month ago, NASA just revealed that their studies show that there are more planets not attached to solar systems than there are planets that are attached to solar systems.
That's true.
So right there, without stating it exactly, they're saying the underlying thesis that makes it possible for Planet X to be doing this.
Okay, now these guys on Nibiru, referred to by the Sumerians as Anunnaki. You said they're from 12 to 16 feet tall. You said they are human, but 12 to 16 feet tall. And apparently the Sumerians depicted them as being very, very tall, and talked about them as being tall. Is there any evidence besides the Sumerian evidence for
Easter Island has got all these very tall statues with very long faces, and everyone says they were not very handsome at all. So, and they all had red hair, and that's what the Easter Island statues are showing. And the people that lived there, which, you know, now it's like 2,000 miles from the coast of South America, but the people that lived there built those statues hoping that they would come back. Because these are the people that brought weapons, tools, agriculture, writing, and a lot of excitement, which most of it was unnecessary and for their own benefit at our expense. But, yeah, that's a symbol. And there's stories all over the world that people dug up burial mounds and found giants in them. And if you've ever read the book Forbidden Archaeology by Richard Primo, you see that archaeology has covered up everything that doesn't fit into the story gets banned. And if you write about it and you're an archaeologist, you lose your tenure, you lose your grant money, you lose your professional status, you lose your right to publish, and you're out the door. Mm-hmm. So that book, Forbidden Archaeology, I recommend to anyone, is full of all the things that didn't fit in. It's like Charles Fort's Book of the Damned, which he just listed all the things that had been damned by science because they didn't fit in. And there's plenty of evidence, but the most recent news that's really exciting is there are two things. The DNA. They say that all humans on Earth came from one woman in Africa about 400 to 600,000 years ago. And that by itself is proof that we were bred out of a test tube lab. And the second thing is Google Earth is exposing things that they flew over them even. They walked through them. They didn't know they were there. People researching on Google Earth have discovered next to the largest gold field on the whole planet in South Africa, the ruins of a city that is 200 miles by 150 miles. And they know that it held at least 2 million people. And the youngest artifact that they've dated out of it is a quarter of a million years old. So when people say, well, we came out of the caveman and 10,000 years ago we were trying to stab giant mammoths to have mammoth steak dinners, that's ridiculous. This planet is so old, and things have come and gone with such regularity, and every time there's a pole shift, and the geographic poles shift, the continents move, the islands sink and raise up, and mountains are formed. And I mean, just look around you at the geology. Right near me here in Maine, I've got you go over a bridge and there's a giant cliff, and right in the middle of it is a giant quartz dagger. And you look at the cliff, and it was laid down as layers of sedimentary rock horizontally. And here the layers are standing vertically, and at some point they split wide enough for white quartz to be extruded right into the middle of it, making a white dagger that's about 100 feet wide. The widest part, it's probably, you know, 30 feet, and it goes to a very fine point. That doesn't happen through global warming.
Okay. What do we know about these Anunnaki as people?
Well, they'd like to dress in togas like the Romans and the Greeks. That's where they got their idea, and that's the gods of Mount Olympus. They came to Earth, and there was one king that was in charge, but they had a rule that the king could only marry his sister. So right there you had some pretty funny things. Then each relative, each cousin, got his own city. So you had different ones starting Sumeria, Babylonia, Mesopotamia. Then they couldn't get along. So then they started having wars with each other, and they've actually found green glass in Iraq from a previous nuclear war. And the Egyptians used to take the green glass and carve scarabs that they would wear as jewelry out of this green glass, which is only found in all the nuclear detonation sites on Earth and nowhere else. And that's the only way that it's formed. So they couldn't get along. And if you look at some of the things Zechariah said, like, for instance, you have in the Bible, you have the Tower of Babel. Man built this huge tower up to heaven, and he couldn't get along, so God came along and made it so they couldn't talk to each other. If you look at what Zechariah says, you know, we were not completely dumb slaves, and we're sitting there looking at these people, and we're going, you know, it must be pretty strange up in heaven. Why don't we build a launch complex and launch a rocket and see what's going on in heaven? I mean, look at these people. They're marrying their sisters. They can't get along. They're destroying each other. They give us weapons, and then they tell us to go to war with their cousins. I mean,
okay, we've got to step away for a break. Ladies and gentlemen, we shall return right after this. Welcome back to the Kevin Smith Show. My guest this evening, Gordon Giannotto. And we're talking about these Anunnaki. And you were talking about what the Bible refers to as the Tower of Babel or Babel. And you said, you know, that from Sitchin we learn in fact, what was going on is they were building a launch complex. You know what? It would probably work a lot better if I turn your mic on. There we go. All right. We've got you. And so let's pick up there. They're building a launch complex, and what happens?
Well, the Anunnaki couldn't stand that. They couldn't stand for that even a minute, so of course they destroyed it. But, you know, you read a lot of these ancient texts. Like, have you ever heard, I'm sure a lot of the listeners have heard of these books, such as the Tibetan Book of the Dead.
Yeah.
Or the Epic of Gilgamesh.
Yeah.
A lot of these ancient texts. And you see that everybody, like even with Egypt, the Egyptian Book of the Dead, they interpret that you had to build your boat underground and there was a journey. And, you know, you read all this stuff, and people without the idea of space travel are going, yeah, that's all you know, what happens in the afterlife. But when you reread those books and you see what they were doing, it was a launch complex. The same way that our astronauts suit up and go through a tunnel and then enter the chamber where they board the top of the rocket, and they get ready for takeoff, and then they take off. This is what the Epic of Gilgamesh is actually describing. This is what the Tibetan Book of the Dead, the Egyptian Book of the Dead, these stories of this afterlife are not the afterlife at all, because the foolish archaeologists with their conventional box-like thinking said, well, they've got to be discussing a spiritual subject. But no, they weren't. They were discussing when you go to heaven, they're not talking about dying and going to heaven. They want to go to where these Anunnaki are to see what the heck is up with these guys. Never saw anything like it.
Okay, so if they're building a launch complex, that would sort of indicate they must have something to launch.
Well, see, there's no details of that either in Zechariah's book or in the Bible, so in the Old Testament. But there are so many other things that tie this together. For instance, when they created us as slaves, we were a lot better looking than they were. So, of course, they wanted to have sex with us. But the thing is if a male Anunnaki had sex with a female human and the baby was going to be 16 feet tall, the woman would never give birth. She would die in childbirth. And you can see why. But the men thought nothing, the Anunnaki men thought nothing of doing that. And that's how the Bible starts out, is with, Genesis, that there were giants in the earth in those days, and they looked with perverted lust upon the daughters of men and mated with them.
Okay, and what's the story, though? I mean, they were here, and apparently now they're not.
All the half-breeds, the half-Anunnaki, half-human, were the kings. They were the sons of the gods. So when you read in the Old Testament about Moses or Enoch or any of these people, you see that they lived a lot longer than anybody else, anywhere from 600 to 1,000 years. They were bigger in stature. They were smarter. And they were friends with the gods. They could call upon God, and wouldn't you know it, a light would come down from heaven and give them what they asked for. So that was pretty powerful. And you've got to realize that, you know, the average person back then didn't understand anything, not even, you know, electric light or lasers or bombs or flying. You know, this was essentially magic to everyone. So a lot of these descriptions, like in the Old Testament, Ezekiel, he sees this craft land, and they're still trying to figure out what it was. But most people that are interested in UFOs point to that as an example of UFOs. But a better example is Enoch, because, you know, Enoch is mentioned in the Bible over and over and over again, and yet he wrote a book, and they wouldn't put it in the Bible. And the reason why is Enoch said, you know, I want to go to heaven. And a light came out of the sky, came down. Enoch boarded the light. He wasn't seen for a year, and his son was out for a walk, and a light came down from heaven and landed near his son. Enoch came out of the light, and he said, you know, I've been going to heaven for a year, and I've written down everything I learned. I've kept a diary, and there's 365 chapters to my book, and it tells everything you want to know about heaven. And he handed it to his son. He said, here's the book. And he said, I like heaven too much, and I'm going back. Well, of course, no normal person is entitled to go to heaven, not even a one-quarter Anunnaki, but a half-Anunnaki could. And when Enoch wanted to go live in heaven, he was allowed to. So he walked into the light. He told his son, don't go anywhere near the light. When I walk into it, you stay far away. It'll burn you. He boarded the light. He took off into heaven, and he was never seen again. So when they came to decide what books to put in the Bible, they didn't want to put Enoch's book, because it showed that all the gods of the Old Testament were actually selfish extraterrestrials.
Okay, well, now, having said that, You have joined Nibiru in the land of the controversial yourself. And
could I say something about myself? Because, you know, people don't know who I am. Like, what is this guy talking about? How come he does that? But I would like to say that I graduated at the top of my class in high school, college, and law school while I worked as much as 50 hours a week to do it. And my father was very famous, very successful, very wealthy. And he said, I grew up poor, and when I die, I'm going to leave everything I have to your brother and sister and you. But until then, you've got to work. So I started working at age 11, and the first money I earned, I spent on a telescope to study the sky. And then when he died, it was all stolen by his accountant in a sort of a pre-Bernie Madoff kind of situation. And so I never got the millions that I had thought I was going to get, but I have been working since I was 11, so it really didn't bother me. And I think I benefited more. But when I was 15, I was in all the advanced groups in high school. When I was 15, and that was 1963, I was selected by the National Science Foundation as one of the brightest science and math students in the New York area. And I was given a special grant from the National Science Foundation to become a future astronaut. And instead of going to high school, I took a train into New York City every day to the Hayden Planetarium, and I got extreme specialized training in astrobiology, astrophysics, physics, astronomy, you name it. And before I could even think of where I might go to school, Princeton and the University of Virginia Schools of Aerospace Engineering were knocking on my door begging me to enroll. And I foolishly chose the University of Virginia. And I say that because all the tenured professors could have cared less about anything exciting and put me right to sleep. And I like to talk in an interesting way so people remember what I have to say. And if my professors had done that, I probably would have learned something. But in 1964, I saw my first spectacular UFO sighting. It was with my mother and brother. We saw a mothership a mile in diameter materialize over San Juan Harbor in Puerto Rico in April of 1964.
Okay, listen, we have to step away for break. And what I would like to do is pick up right there at Puerto Rico where you saw the mothership. And when we come back from this break, we'll get the rest of that story. Ladies and gentlemen, my guests this evening, Gordon James Gianinotto, and we are talking about lots and lots of stuff related to Planet X, Nibiru, the Anunnaki. We've got more coming up, and we will be opening the phone lines in a little while.
To the Kevin Smith Show.
All right, welcome back to the Kevin Smith Show. And to my guest, Gordon Gianinotto. And, ladies and gentlemen, those of you who are joining us just now in this second hour, welcome aboard. We are delighted you are here. Man, my sympathy to you for whatever it is that kept you away for that first hour, because you have missed a universe, literally a universe of information. We've been talking about Planet X, Nibiru, the Anunnaki, right at this moment, we have our guest paused in mid-thought. You didn't know I had a little pause button over here, but I can click a little pause button. It pauses that guest in mid-thought. Gordon, you were telling us about having seen a UFO or a mothership in Puerto Rico.
Yes, it was a mile in diameter, flat on the bottom, circular, and hemispherical. So it looked like a flying top half of a grapefruit. Hmm. And it looked like it was made of white milk glass and that there was an orange light bulb in it, and it winked in overhead. Well, my mother, who loved alcohol, and I don't drink at all, she she had to take us in April of 1964 to see the Bacardi factory. So, of course, we were late with everything. We were out there the last tour, and we're taking the ferry back to San Juan, which it's on an island in the harbor. We took the ferry back, and all the people on the ferry were all the workers who work in the Bacardi factory, distillery. And they were all speaking Spanish, and we were new, so we wanted to get up on the upper deck and look at the lights of San Juan. So it was a cloudless sky, and all of a sudden this little gray cloud materialized in a cloudless sky. And it looked like it got bigger and bigger and bigger, and like a sun was going to rise behind it. The same color and size as the sun, bright orange. And then it slowly moved out from behind this cloud, and there it was, flat on the bottom, hemispherical on the top, and no detail, just the whole thing, bright orange. And as we watched it for a total of probably 15 minutes, a door on the side opened up that you couldn't see until it opened up, because there was no detail. It was just this top half of a sphere, and flat and circular on the bottom. On the side, this door opened up, and three saucers flew out one at a time out this doorway, out over the Atlantic, and disappeared. And then the door closed, and once again there was no detail. And just like somebody had a dimmer switch on it, it just winked out. And I went, "Oh my God!" And I said, "What'd you think of that?" My mother and my brother go, "Well, that was interesting. But what's for dinner?" And I'm like, "Forget dinner. Do you realize what we just saw?" And to put it in perspective, it was like a mosquito next to a bear. That's the size of the saucers next to the mothership.
All right.
So now I'm at the University of Virginia, and I'm bored out of my mind, and the war in Vietnam is going on, and I'm realizing that I've already seen a technology that exceeds anything that NASA could ever hope to do, including rockets, missiles, you name it. And so that was when, after 2 years of that, I dropped out.
All right. Now, you got a law degree. You're licensed to practice law, not in the state where you live, but
you could. No, in Connecticut.
Yeah. No interest in practicing law?
Well, actually, I love law. I watch court TV a lot when I'm not doing anything else, and I love helping people. Absolutely love it. But it just reached a point, especially in Connecticut. And I don't want to be too specific, but let me just say I got really tired of how much justice can you afford. And I just felt sorry for people who were caught up in a very crooked system. And I was sitting there at a desk inside a room with somebody that was very dangerous. And I was thinking, and this was in 1985, and I was thinking, why in the heck am I inside sitting at a desk for the rest of my life with people who at best are argumentative, at worst they're totally dangerous and violent, when I could be outside on the coast of Maine being a contractor with clients that are actually happy to see me. And I can be out in the sunshine, and I can be working for myself and schedule my own time and be creative. And so that was that. I said, that's it, I'm moving.
Fair enough. There's before we open up the telephone lines, there are a couple of other pictures I want to show people that are watching our TV channel. I'll describe these for our audience that are listening via computers, radios, mobile devices, etc. One of these pictures we've already had on the screen. This was taken in Jakarta. It's a picture of the sun. Obviously they're using a lens filter for this. Otherwise, you would get nothing except light. You wouldn't have anything else in the picture. So, if you think of the sun as a clock, at about the 5 o'clock position, a fair distance away from the sun, still close, but a fair distance away, there is another very bright object, and it is much, much, much smaller than the sun, and it has red wings. That's what it looks like. It looks like it's got red wings spread out on one wing on each side of it. And this is the object that our guest has identified as Nibiru. It fits the description of the ancients as well. Now, the next picture that we're looking at is also of the sun. This was taken in Greece, October 2009, and instead of being at the 5 o'clock position, think of it as being between the 11 and 12 o'clock position and very near the sun from this perspective, taken in Greece. It's not the moon. The moon was to the east of here and out of the frame of the shot. So there it is, whatever it is. But then you also sent me something, Gordon, that fascinates me, and it is from the SOHO satellite, and it shows the sun, it shows Saturn, it shows Venus, and then it shows something that's labeled Dark Twin.
I was hoping you were going to talk about that.
Now, what are we looking at here?
Well, this is a very singular proof that what Zeta Talk says is true. There's a website, http://zetatalk.com. And there's a woman in Wisconsin who, since 1995, has been taking questions from the public and asking them to unselfish human extraterrestrials from Zeta Reticuli, called the Zetas. And she's been asking them questions, and then they've been telepathically giving her the answer, and she's written them down, and that's what the website Zeta Talk is. And if you can think of somebody that's done this for no pay, no money, had her family break up, ended in divorce, and has continued to do this even though she now has a heart condition and it's been very difficult, she has posted 39,000 pages of questions and answers. And Zeta Talk is the only place in the entire world where that dark twin is mentioned. And what it is that on the other side of the sun from the Earth is a planet the same size as the Earth called the dark twin. And it has no oceans, no atmosphere, no water, no people, and it's actually a blackish bluish color, so it's very hard to photograph. And the Earth, as Planet X, remember I said the solar system is turning counterclockwise around the sun. If you could stand up above it and look down, you'd see that. Planet X came in from behind the sun going clockwise. So in 2003, it came around the right-hand side of the sun and entered our inner solar system, and it stopped the Earth in its orbit. So the dark twin, continuing in its orbit, backed up and came right next to the Earth. So what you have is you have the dark twin, Earth, and Venus caught in a cup. And if you look at many of the crop circles, you'll see that they portray this big planet, and in front of it is a cup, and in the cup are three circles, and the three circles are the Earth, Venus, and the dark twin. No one in NASA has ever mentioned it. No astronomer has ever discussed it. No calculations have been ever done that would lead you to think it was there. And yet, the NASA SOHO satellite takes a clear, absolutely multiple pictures of it. Those aren't the only ones, but those are the only ones that I have. But there it is. And to me, that's the absolute confirmation that what Zeta Talk says is true. And to understand how the Earth could stop in its orbit, I've got to digress to something that will probably blow your mind. But, you know, I've seen so many saucers over the years. Like I said, I've seen 36, and no two similar. And around 1974, I was thinking, how are they doing that? You know, and people were talking about gravity and anti-gravity. And I was thinking, well, what the heck is gravity? And Kevin, you know of the electromagnetic spectrum.
Yes.
And most listeners have heard of it.
Yes.
And they know that it starts down at the lower end with heat, and then sound, and then light, and then radio waves, and then magnetism, and then it ends up at the other end of the scales, gravity, right? And
right.
You've been taught since you were a child for the last 400 years, since anybody ever even mentioned it, they've discussed that gravity pulls. So I was thinking about, you know, let's look at this electromagnetic spectrum. You have sound. Well, let's say you start with heat. Heat doesn't pull. It pushes. Heat goes out. You can reflect it back, but you can't suck it back. And then you go to sound, and sound goes out, and it can be reflected back, but it doesn't suck in. It goes out. Then you go to light, and light goes out, and it doesn't pull inward. I mean, have you ever heard of light sucking in on itself? No. So, and then you go to radio waves, and they go out, and once again, they can be reflected back, but they go out. And then you go to magnetism, and magnetism is polar, has a pushing force and a pulling force, but the pulling force doesn't pull. What you have is, it's like a vacuum cleaner where you hook up the hose to the intake. So the air comes out the exhaust and gets sucked in the other end so that it can go back out again. So magnetism, they call it polar, and it has a lot of polar effects to it, but it's actually going out and not coming back. It's just that it creates a vacuum, so it sucks itself back. But so now you get to gravity, and all of a sudden we are expected, like good little sheeple, we are expected to believe that gravity pulls and doesn't push. So I was thinking about this, and in 1988, one of the last issues of Omni magazine had an article on the foremost gravity researcher in the world, Dr. Ephraim Fishbach, discovered that there's a mysterious force of gravity that pushes. So I called him up, and this is before you had bargain rates on telephones, and I spoke to him at Purdue University, where he's a top professor. He's the foremost gravity researcher in the world. And I said, Dr. Fishbach, is there any proof that gravity pulls? And he goes, that's really interesting that you mention that, because there absolutely is not. And I said, well, I figured out that it's got to pull. There cannot be such a thing as anti-gravity. There's just gravity and more gravity. So when a saucer takes off, it has a gravity generator, and it pushes itself away from the Earth. And he goes, Gordon, if you could come up with an experiment that would distinguish whether gravity pushes or pulls, you would probably want to be one of the most famous scientists in the last 1,000 years and maybe for the next 1,000 years. He goes, we've been working on that, and nobody has even one idea of an experiment that would prove whether gravity pushes or pulls. The reason why I mention that is, oh, first of all, I'd like to get credit for that, but second of all, when Planet X came into the solar system going the opposite direction of the Earth, if it were true that gravity pulled, then everything would collide. It would just combine, and that would be that. Life on Earth would be over, life on Planet X would be over. But look at the facts. The universe is expanding, expanding, expanding. And the only reason that happens is because gravity pushes. So when Planet X came into the solar system, went around the sun and got in between the sun and the Earth, it stopped the Earth in its tracks. And when the dark twin came around counterclockwise, all of a sudden it couldn't go any further. And then Venus, when it came around to that side of the sun, the side that we're on, it was stopped too. So if you look at these pictures, Kevin, you'll see that Planet X right now, not sometime in the future, this is not a myth, these are NASA pictures. They show that Planet X is right now in between the Earth and the Sun. And it's not directly in line, because if it were, you would see a spot on the Sun. There you go, you know, you put a, get some welders, go out. Please, nobody who's listening to this, ever look directly into the Sun, because you will be blinded. It's a no-no. But digital cameras, marvelous little things that they are, you can point them at the sun and take a picture. And the camera adjusts the exposure. And that's what people are doing. You will be amazed if you do any research. If you think that I'm making this up, just start checking Google for pictures of Planet X and videos of Planet X, because every day, thousands of people around the world are taking pictures of this. And it is, right now, I hate to tell you, 30 million miles from the Earth. And it's stopped in its progression, and Earth has stopped in its progression. And if you've ever had animals and you have a pet, and you have like two dogs, and one dog corners the other. The one that's cornered will sort of dart to the right, then the other dog will dart to the left to try and stop it. Then the first dog that's cornered will dart to the left, and then the other dog. And so there's this dance going on, and when the dance is over, and finally Planet X can move again, that's when pole shift happens. And there isn't an exact date for it. It's an event, and it depends upon the movement of three planets that are stopping Planet X and Planet X itself. So first, Venus is going to escape the cup, then the dark twin, and at that point, Planet X is going to make its rush to leave, and at that point, it's going to come to within 14 million miles of the Earth, and it will appear in the sky as large as the full moon. So I hope that explains that.
All right. Now, any idea in terms of time? I know you said there's not a calendar for that, but I mean, any speculation?
Like I said, first, you're going to have, and if you read Zeta Talk, Nancy Leader calls it that we're in 7 out of 10 right now, and 10 out of 10 is bullshit. So 7 out of 10 is not even complete, and what completes it is Japan being shattered, and within hours of that, the New Madrid Fault goes off, and within hours of that, the Atlantic Rift widens, and a huge wall of water, and you would think, well, if the rift widens, a tidal wave would come back towards New York, but it won't, because the Gulf Stream is going to force the whole thing towards the UK. So you've got this 300-foot tsunami sweeping over England and continuing and taking out Denmark. I've been in Denmark. And I don't even think there's a hill in Denmark that's more than 150, 200 feet. And a 300-foot tidal wave is just going to do it in. So, and that's not even pole shift, but that's enough of a wake-up call that everyone should be asking themselves, what the heck am I doing? And there will come a day where everyone around the world will look up, and without using goggles, without using special filters, they are going to see Planet X separate from the sun, and they won't lose their eyesight to do it. And when that happens, and it will take about 3 days for every single person in the world to look up and go, oh my God, what's that? And people are going to say, that's what's about to cause pole shift. Mark that day on your calendar, because pole shift will be 7.3 weeks after that. And what happens is it takes only 1 hour, and nothing stops the core of the Earth from turning, but the Atlantic Rift is the most magnetic part of the Earth's surface. So as Planet X draws nearer, and it has a magnetic field 23 times the power of Earth's magnetic field, it will grab the Atlantic Rift and rip the crust free of the core, so that it'll just be like a tissue paper on an orange. The crust will be slipping around in all kinds of directions, and Planet X will zoom on by, and as it leaves, the crust will reattach itself, and that will be our new north and south. But the core will still have its north pole pointed up, but the new north pole that will be on the up part of the core of the Earth will be Recife, Brazil. That is the new north pole.
Okay, now I've got to ask this. And let me announce, too, the telephone lines are open now, folks, at 623-444-5889. 623-444-5889. If you have a question or comment, that's the number to call. And, you know, if you call, we'll put you on the air. If you don't call, we're going to keep talking. I got to ask you this. You said after we see this, all this happen, 7.3 weeks later.
50 days.
50. How do you know that?
Well, the Zetas say that, and I have no reason to disbelieve it. As a trial lawyer, and even before that, I was interested for spiritual reasons. I learned to recognize when somebody's telling the truth. Their voice has a different tone to it. And when people are lying and they're making stuff up, it's a totally different situation. And I got really good being a trial lawyer. I'd have witnesses on the stand, and I'm thinking, boy, this guy is lying like a rug. And there's all kinds of, you could consider me a body language expert. And when somebody puts their hand in front of their face, it's to block they're saying to you, I'm not telling you the whole story, and I'm probably lying. And if you ask a few more questions, you'll find out whether they are or they aren't. But I've learned over time that when somebody's saying something that's true, it has a ring to it that goes on forever. And it's like when somebody lies, it's like they're speaking a discordant note, and it just breaks up of its own volition without going anywhere. And that's, you know, I'm just going to have to come back on your show, because I haven't even gotten into dimensional change or contacting extraterrestrials, but there's a lot going on, and I decided in 1968 that I was going to teach myself telepathy, and I did. And in 1988, I had a saucer come from the Pleiades. They told me before they were coming that they were coming to take me on board at my request, and I met humans from the Pleiades. And these are people that can walk down any street on the planet, and you would not know they're from another planet.
Okay, Gordon, let's go to the telephone, and let me remind all of our listeners that the telephone line is open, those who are watching on our TV channel. The telephone number is on the screen. Those who are listening, it is 623-444-5889. Caller, you are live on the Kevin Smith Show. Your first name, and from where are you calling?
This is Greg from New York, Kevin.
Hello, Greg.
How are you?
Good.
Kevin, I got a question for Gordon. Gordon, are you equating this comet Elenine at all with Planet X?
I'm so glad you asked that, because NASA is so full of lies and red herrings, it's not funny. You think they would discuss the thing that shows up on their pictures. But you watch, Planet Elenin is going to be the biggest non-event you've ever seen in your life. They've got you worried about
non-event.
Solar flares. They've got you worried about Comet Elenin. They've got you worried about asteroids, meteors. They've got you worried about global warming. All those things are lies, and they will all come to nothing. And they're scrambling. They are desperate, because they know when you realize that they've been lying to you for 60 years, you're not going to be happy. But, of course, by then you're going to be thinking about your own safety and not looking for NASA employees to take it out on, which would be a waste of time anyway, because they're not free to speak. They really aren't. But the Comet Elenin is another red herring, and the search for a brown dwarf in the Kuiper Belt in the outer solar system is another red herring. And
okay, we have to step away for a break. Greg, do you want to hang on through the break?
Sure. Hey, Kevin.
All right. Everybody hang on. Stay right where you are, and we'll be back right after this.
And you're listening to The Kevin Smith Show.
All right, welcome back to The Kevin Smith Show. And my guest this evening, Gordon Gianinotto. And on the line from New York, Greg. Gordon, you were answering Greg's question about Comet Elenine, and you said it's a red herring. It's going to be a non-event. And again, we have pilot error here. I didn't have your mic up. All right, go ahead.
Exactly,
Gordon.
It's a red herring.
Okay. And Greg, did you have another question or comment about that?
I did, because see, what I'm finding in my research is that there is the small body database browser on the NASA site. And then you have the administrator talking to his folks about a preparedness plan.
Exactly.
You know, I know
this
as
NASA
much as you got. They throw up a whole bunch of smoke screens, and they are not honest. But I just have to pay attention to that. And so I wanted to know what your opinion was on the whole thing.
Well, all the employees of NASA know what's going to happen.
Correct.
And they can't talk about
us.
Yeah. Okay, so the cataclysms that they're being prepared for, We all think it's probably Comet Elenine, but you're saying that's not it. It's Nibiru or Planet X.
Exactly. You have to forget NASA and just go on the web, which is the greatest source of public information there is, and just look at all the pictures that, I mean, I get up every morning and I have a cup of coffee and watch the sunrise, okay? And in June of last year, and I have the Weather Channel on, and I'm a trained astrologer. I've got an ephemeris. I know when the sunrise is, okay? And every day in the beginning of June last year, the sun rose, let's say, at, 4:30, okay? And I get up, and, about 3:30, and I'm making a cup of coffee, and the sun rises an hour early. And I have people telling me that the moon has been so far overhead that the shadow from the moon only covers their feet. But you see, the average person doesn't look at these things to see this. But the Planet X is coming at the Earth, laying on its side. Now remember, I said all the planets in our solar system, the North Pole faces up. But Planet X is coming in like a railroad train with a headlight. And its flashlight, its headlight, is the North Pole. And first when it pointed at the sun, it caused the sun to erupt. And the eruption caused melting of the ice on the moon and Mars. Now, you can run your SUV all you want on Earth, but you're not going to melt the ice on the moon and Mars. You're not going to make Uranus and Neptune change color. You're not going to create a third red spot on Jupiter when there was only one for 350 years. So it has nothing to do. Global warming, Al Gore volunteered to help in the cover-up of Planet X by taking this whole issue. And if you look into global warming, you'll see there was a warm spell in the year 1000 that was warmer than now, and there was more carbon dioxide than there is now, and there was no industry. So who's kidding who here? But the point is that there are a lot of these red herrings out there, and a lot of these things have been made up. So the sun was supposed to be in its quiet period, and here comes the North Pole of Planet X right towards the sun and causes it to erupt. So in its super quiet period, it sets new records for eruption. Then it passes the sun, and the South Pole of Planet X is facing the sun, and now when it's supposed to be in a period of maximum eruption, it's all quiet because all the particles are getting sucked up by the South Pole of Planet X. But the Earth is wobbling, and that's why you have these tremendous... I included in those pictures I sent you, there was 1 week in December where 100 weather records were set in like one day. And we've had situations all winter long where it was 70 degrees in one town, and the next town over it was snowing. And the reason why is that the North Pole, if you have two magnets, you buy them at Radio Shack, and you stand one up, and you put the other horizontally towards it and move it, it knocks the first magnet over. So there's going to come a time in that period of that last 7.3 weeks where the Earth actually falls over to get away from Planet X. And the North Pole, the Northern Hemisphere, will be in darkness for 3 days or maybe even 6 days. And we will not see any sunlight, whereas the Southern Hemisphere will be completely lit for 24 hours a day.
All right, let's go back to the telephone. Caller, you're live on the Kevin Smith Show. Your first name and from where are you calling?
Hello. Good evening, Kevin. This is Louis from Connecticut.
Hello, Louis.
Yes. Good evening.
Hi, Louis.
Good evening.
Good evening to your guest, Gordon.
Yes. Hi, Louis.
Yes. I'd like to ask him a question, though. Every morning, I noticed the last 4 to 5 years, before the sun gets out, the sky is like red or copper, and it's spreading more now in the last 4 years than ever. Is that a sign of Nibiru?
Yes. That's very insightful, Louis. I'll tell you that if everyone has noticed, but nobody can really measure it, and you know, there's no way to really discuss it with people where you can agree on what you're talking about. But the color of the light is different, and the reason why is because Planet X is in between us and the sun, but it's not directly in line. It's off to the side. So At sunrise, it's on the left side of the sun, and at sunset, it's on the right side of the sun.
And then
it also depends on your perspective of where in the northern hemisphere, where in the southern hemisphere. So people are getting all kinds of pictures. But basically, in the northern hemisphere, it's on the left side of the sun at sunrise, and it's on the right side of the sun at sunset. And being that it's in between, and you can figure that out. I mean, just go outside, face east, put your finger on the left side of the sun, go overhead, and then go back down towards the west, and you'll see that what was on the left side of the sun in the east is now the right side of the sun in the west. So it's in the same place. But it has a huge cloud of moons and rocks and dust millions of miles across behind it, and that's what gets backlit by the sun and creates this additional glow, and it gives you this pinkish-reddish iron oxide glow that adds to the light that we have. So you are very insightful and very observant, and I figure you're going to be one of the first people to know when pole shift's going to be happening.
Oh, yeah. See, I tell people that, Gordon, and they think I'm crazy. And I've been watching that for like 3 or 4 years, and now I see like sunset today is spreading more. I mean, the clouds are getting all, rust color, and it's spreading big time.
Well, people have debated what chemtrails were, and chemtrails is an attempt by rich people who have financed it. Bush and Cheney knew about it. Obama knows about it. But they basically have been spraying aluminum into the upper atmosphere to try and block in a crisscross checkerboard fashion so that not that many people are going to see Planet X. And they've done a pretty good job of it. But yet, if you go on the internet, you're going to be amazed at the videos and the pictures that people have taken every day. They get new ones, get posted all the time. And one of the new techniques is to go photograph the sun with your digital camera, reflected in a swimming pool or off of a car windshield. And for some reason, that acts the same as if there's a filter and gets better pictures.
Okay, well, thank you so much, Gordon. I really appreciate it.
Good show tonight,
Kevin. Thank you.
All right. Thanks for the call. Gordon, I have a flash message that's come in from one of our listeners in Puerto Rico. And he says, "Hi, Kevin. Great show tonight. Gordon, do you think that when Nibiru arrives, I can say goodbye to my mortgage and car payment?"
Yes, you'll never have to pay it off. It's true.
There you go, Leonardo.
Listen, what's going to happen is all the economies are going to fail, all governments are going to fail, all religions are going to fail, and we're going to have survival communities. And even the elite are realizing they're not going to be rescued. If they want to survive, they're going to have to roll up their sleeves. We're going to all go back to the year 1825, technologically speaking. So you're going to need to be able to do something to barter, because that's the only way. You cannot put 40 years worth of underwear, socks, deodorant, shampoo, clothing, tools, food, and if you did have that much, somebody would just come and take it. So there is not going to be any law and order, but there are going to be survival communities. And the unselfish extraterrestrials have pledged that they will help survival communities where there is not one single selfish person. That means you cannot have one person come in and eat enough food to feed 12 people for a week in one afternoon. You're going to have to give them a choice. Be shot or leave. Be banished. I mean, these are going to be hard times, and the unselfish are going to inherit the earth. But they're not stupid. They're not meek. They're smart, but they're unselfish. So they're empathetic and caring, but there isn't anything you can do with selfish people. So it's going to be tough. I mean, it is going to be tough. But, yes, you're not going to have to pay off your car payment or your house payment. And the banks know that. There already isn't enough money. In one European country, even if you're a multimillionaire, they had a rule you could only take out $3,000 a week. Now they cut that in half to $1,500 a week because there isn't any money.
All right, back to the telephone. Caller, you're live on the Kevin Smith Show. Your first name and from where are you calling?
Yeah, Kevin, this is Rusty from Michigan.
Hello, Rusty.
Hi. Hello, Gordon.
Hi, Rusty.
I just got one question, and I'll take my answer off the air. You mentioned about like back with the giants of old and that, about they were actually building, trying to go to the physical heaven. He was indicating that, like Enoch and all those, that it was actually this physical heaven with these spacecraft. What is your view then of the afterlife? And I'll just take my answer off the air. Thanks.
Okay, thanks for the call.
Well, Rusty, that's a nice question. And I do have an explanation, and Zeta Talk doesn't talk about it, and I know a lot of things that the Zetas never talk about because they're very narrow on surviving pole shift and making a conscious choice to be unselfish in intention and behavior. And you can't pretend to be unselfish. You either are or you aren't. And the selfish people have no empathy whatsoever. But this is the way I look at it. Imagine that your God, or I don't like to use God because it implies somebody sitting on a throne. I prefer the Creator, because I consider myself more of a spiritual person than a religious person. But imagine that you're the Creator, you haven't created the universe yet, and you're sitting there, and you know everything, you could do anything, you could make anything, you could be anything, and you're thinking, gee, you know, I'm all that is now. How do I take myself to my own next step? So you get this creative idea. What if I set every cell in my body free to, and then create a universe for those cells to go live, and they could experience everything, and then someday they would die, their bodies would die.
Well, I don't know what happened. We have suddenly lost contact with our guest. So we will see if we can get him back online. I don't know. There he is. Okay, well, that was weird, Gordon.
Yeah. So the Creator, we're all basically creators in training, and we're all going to merge back together. So my welfare is your welfare, and if you're not doing well, I'm not doing well. So that's my view of the afterlife, is that we are all creators in training. And in this level now, what I call the third dimension, we have a mix of selfish and unselfish. The next level, it's a complete separation. It's the selfish and the unselfish completely separated. And when the all level right, wait, after that,
Gordon,
all is one.
Gordon, we have to step away for a break. Ladies and gentlemen, we'll be back with our guests right after this, so don't go away. Welcome back to the Kevin Smith Show. We are on Final Approach here this evening, and that means we only have a few minutes left in tonight's show. My guest this evening is Gordon Giannotto. It's not a difficult name to say, but I have murdered it several times tonight, and I certainly apologize for that. Gordon, let's go to the telephone. We have a caller on hold. Okay. Caller, you're live on the Kevin Smith Show. Your first name and from where are you calling?
Yeah, my name is Ed Grimsley, and I'm calling from California.
Hello, Ed Grimsley.
How are you doing?
I'm doing well. Do you have a question or comment for our guest this evening?
You know, I must say that I did not know what the show was going about, but I thought I would call in and, you know, wish everybody well.
All right. And, well, I appreciate it. We're talking with Gordon Giannotto, and we're talking about the soon arriving cataclysms related to Nibiru and Planet X. Ed, I appreciate the call. Folks, you know that I don't believe anything. You've heard me say it. And as a matter of fact, our guest knows that, Gordon. I've told you that, haven't I?
You certainly have.
And it's the truth. That doesn't mean, and so, you know, unfortunately, Gordon, we live in a situation where our sort of common basic understanding has eroded. So what happens is words no longer have meanings, they have feelings. And I say, I don't believe anything, and people say, oh, well, then that means you disbelieve. No, that's a whole different set of faith. You see, believe is faith on the positive end of the pole. Disbelieve is faith on the negative end of the pole. I don't disbelieve, because that's faith too. I simply say I either know or I don't know. And I have to say, Gordon, you have presented us with some very compelling evidence here tonight, especially for those who have been able to see it on their television screen or on their computer screen. Compelling evidence that there is for sure something out there, a couple of somethings out there, that NASA's not talking about.
Oh, you know it.
Why aren't they talking about it?
Well, the thing is that everyone would have to move, basically. 90% of the world's population lives on the seacoast, and a 600-foot tidal surge is going to come in. You saw the Japanese tsunami. That was 33 feet. Can you imagine what 600 feet is going to do?
600 feet is going to be an incredible, incredible disaster.
It's possible that just when the New Madrid Fault goes off. Now remember, that's not even pole shift, but there is a down warping there, and what that means is salt water is going to go all the way up the Mississippi and Ohio rivers and join with the Great Lakes, and that is just the New Madrid Fault. Then the St. Lawrence Seaway is going to rip open wide, and the eastern part of the United States is going to be separate the way New Zealand is separate from Australia. And it's going to be, the Mississippi at its mouth is going to be 200 miles wide of salt water going all the way to the Great Lakes, which will also be salt water. So, you know, and the two places you do not want to move to in the United States are Kokomo, Indiana, and Denver to Boulder, Colorado, because that's where the government is setting up its bases. People don't realize the IRS and the CIA have already moved to Denver. The whole government is going to move to Denver, and they're going to have enough supplies and materials to run martial law for about 10 years within their area. So what you need to be doing is looking at a safety land like Pennsylvania or Montana and moving there. And even if you don't have anything, I mean, these days people can't even sell their houses. Just take a trip up there and meet some people and find a spot that you'd like to go to, because when those 7.3 weeks start, there's going to be total chaos. First of all, the quakes will have taken out all the bridges. Second of all, there'll be no law and order. Third of all, everyone will be carrying what they think is important, even though they'll never be able to use a TV again. People will have TVs. They'll have gasoline engine things, the ATVs, whatever. And you need to learn how to use hand tools. You've got to find a safety land. And I don't want to scare you because, you know, you're hearing this for the first time. You're thinking, well, you know, what if this guy's in a nutcase? But you can tell I'm not stupid, so maybe you have to listen to me. And I'm telling you, scope out where you would like to move to that's a safety land. And you can go to Zeta Talk, and they have a whole process where you can figure out what's a safe location in your area of the world. But 2 years after the pole shift, when the new North Pole is off Recife, Brazil, all the ice will be in the wrong places, and it's going to melt. And the oceans are going to come up 700 feet. So you have to figure. Now, I'm in Maine because Maine was held down by the glaciers, and believe it or not, there's two places in the world that are going to come up at pole shift, and that is New Zealand and Maine, because they were held down by glaciers. When the crust comes free of the core, they're going to pop up about 450, 500 feet. And that's why I'm here.
Well, doesn't that mean that those places that are popping up are going to be experiencing some rather tremendous earthquakes?
Yes, but the like, for instance, the North American plate is one of the most stable plates in the world, and from the west of the Mississippi to California is very stable. The earth changes are basically the Pacific is going to narrow and the Atlantic is going to widen, and California is not going to go under the Pacific. Instead, it's going to ride up over the Pacific plate. So the North American plate is going to, here's the Pacific plate down low, and the North American plate's going to ride over it. So when it does that, it's going to shatter the edge of the North American plate. So salt water is going to pour into the central valleys where all our food is produced and flood them. They'll all be salt water. And California will be known as the California Islands, where the Sierras are now. So, but all of Eastern Asia is going under. Indonesia is sinking now. Eastern coastal Thailand, coastal Vietnam, the Philippines are all sinking. And South America is trying to move west into the Pacific. And the bottom of South America is firmly attached to the Antarctic plate. So if the top half of South America moves west 300 miles, the only way it can do that is if there's cracks in Brazil and Argentina, and that's what you see on the news now. So the reason why we're NATO's attacking North Africa has nothing to do with Gaddafi. That's the least problem. Egypt is going to be underwater. The European elite realize that they cannot survive in Europe. It's all going to be underwater. Most of even salt water is going to go into the valleys of Switzerland. So their only hope of survival is to capture North Africa and move inland to the mountains and build fortresses for the elite to survive. And that's what the whole story of Libya is. And the United States has no interest in perpetuating the royal families of the world in North Africa. And that's why a lot of the Congress and the senators are voting against the war in Libya, because it has nothing to do with us.
Gordon, we've only touched the tip of the iceberg here tonight.
I know. Back, Kevin. Do you think you might?
Well, as a matter of fact, I was going to ask you, I'll get with you after the show, and perhaps we can get you back on later this week.
Whatever you say, I'd be pleased to come on, because I have so much information that people are actually very hungry for. And, you know, it's funny, all these years I've spent studying all this stuff and learning things, people said, why can't you have a normal job and be like other people? But it turns out that with all the disillusionment in the world, people are actually hungry for the truth, and that's what I've got.
All right, you just stay online with me for a moment. Ladies and gentlemen, that's it for this evening. We'll have Gordon back with us later in the week. My friends call me Steel Eye, my enemies do too, and you can call me whatever you want. Just keep coming back again and again and again. Until next time, so long, everybody.